Bring yourself back online.
Remember.
Welcome back to Freeze All Motor Functions. There's no off season for us.
There is no off season.
Yeah. What?
Ever. Westworld has no off season. This is forever.
It's a sport.
Westworld is a sport.
And there's no fucking off season.
Where's that shirt at, dude?
What shirt? Westworld is a sport?
Yes.
I have to get to designing.
Yeah, you need to get on that.
So I actually know a guy. His name is Pinchas.
Oh, come on.
Moskal.
All right, let me ask you a question. This is a serious question.
Yeah.
How do you come up with these names?
I just looked at you, and Pinchas Moskal is what came to mind.
It's a weird skill you have, because like I would have gone with normal things like Steve Herrenheim or something, but you went with Pinchas Moskal.
Well, do you want his backstory?
I do not, Jared. I don't think we have time for Pinchas' backstory today.
Just know that the 4 years he spent in Zagreb were the most formative years of his life.
That's, wow. You need to write a book.
Thank you. All right, here's the deal. This is our interview with Phil from Westworld. His name is Patrick Cage II. That's the actor who plays Phil. And I'm just gonna go out on a limb and say that this is the best interview that I'll probably ever do in my entire life.
Oh, bar none. This dude, Patrick Cage II, this is unbelievable. It couldn't have gone better. Jared and I were joking that the second he dropped an F-bomb, we knew it was gonna be phenomenal. And it is. We're not pointing your leg here. This is, you have to listen to every second of this. The dude was unbelievable, very forthright with his own information, theories, and I don't want to ruin anything because you're about to hear it, so I won't say anything else.
Yeah, enjoy, because this was as fun to listen to, I hope, as it was to do.
So here it is.
Right now. All right, we're here with our first ever Westworld cast member guest. You know him. You love him. You're still wondering the exact details surrounding his character's death. Patrick Cage II.
Hey, guys. What's going on, man?
Thank you for coming on the show, Patrick.
Thank you guys for having me, man. I really appreciate it.
So Patrick, of course, played Phil, the Delos body shop technician who helped out Dolores until Teddy used up the last of his mercy on him in that train car. We have some burning questions to ask you from both ourselves and our listeners, Patrick. But before we get into them, can you tell us about, you know, where you're from, how you got into acting, and how you landed this amazing role on Westworld?
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm from Los Angeles, born and raised, and I kind of got into acting as a kid. My mom had a lot of friends in the industry, and she would take me around with her pretty much everywhere. And they were like, your kid's got something. You should, like, try to get him an agent or get him onto a show or something. And so I got into it a little bit as a kid. I stopped around, like, middle school. And then when I was 15, I was like, you know, I think this is something I really do want to do. And so I got more serious about it and kind of took it into my own hands. And then just started on the auditioning circuit, got an agent, got a manager eventually. And, and Westworld was just like any other audition. It just came up. I was super hyped because I was the biggest fan of season one. So
that's awesome.
When the audition came into my email, I was like, oh fuck, I gotta work on this. I gotta work right now. Everything shuts down. It was like the next day too. So yeah, I just immediately from the moment I got it, went home, just started going over the lines. And it was interesting because it wasn't the actual sides from the show. It was like a fake scene that they had written just for the audition.
Oh, really?
And yeah, which was pretty interesting because the character was still there, but it just wasn't those scenes just didn't exist.
And no, so was that to avoid spoilers altogether?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, just to not let any content leak, just because I'm sure they're sending it to so many different people that they don't want
any
plot lines getting out. Yeah.
So you interviewed for the character of Phil, but like a completely different scenario that Phil was never in or anything?
It wasn't even Phil at the time. It was a tired tech.
Oh.
And that was actually the cool part about the show is when I auditioned for it at first, didn't even have a name. It was Tire Tech, and he was only supposed to be in one episode. That episode when I come up, I show Teddy his past, mm-hmm. and then I think I was supposed to die then, honestly. But I think I was supposed to get shot just like everybody else did. But yeah, they just, I remember I was on set after filming a couple of days, and they were like, "Hey, are you, what's your availability through October?" And I was like, I'm available. I'm here.
That's pretty interesting, because does that mean that like they can just go off of how, you know, how the shoot is going and just change up the storyline completely based on that?
I don't think change up the storyline majorly, but I think they do kind of, they're definitely tweaking as they go, I feel like, but they have a definite plan and idea of where their show is heading. And, I think that was kind of the awesome part about working with Lisa and Jonah is that they both know exactly what they want and where it was going. And so any questions that you had, they could answer as long as it wasn't giving away too much. But yeah, that show is, they're pretty on course for what they want. And I love that they like to do a lot of things practically, like, cause there is so much CGI that has to be done with just like the world of Westworld.
Right.
But most of the things like people getting shot, the blood, the guns, everything's real for the most part. And so I think that just adds to the fervor of the set.
What do you mean it's real for the most part? Like people getting murdered on set?
No, not at all. They're not using real bullets, but they're using what are they? Blanks. And
cool.
But the blanks is like the, I think the sound, having the actual sound of a gun going off adds to the heat of, okay, I might get shot. it makes your job just a bit easier. I think that fear aspect just raises a bit. They make your job really easy for you.
Gunfire can be quite jarring.
Yeah, you know, it's not something a lot of people are used to hearing, right, I suppose. And so yeah, when you're on a set and when it's written for the environment and your character luckily is supposed to be terrified for his life, it makes everything so much easier.
Yeah, it's helpful.
So you've had some other roles on big shows. You've been on This Is Us, Criminal Minds, Jane the Virgin. How did these roles help prepare you for this Westworld gig?
I just think being on sets, being on professional working sets, you get a feel for the environment, the pacing, the workflow, how to manage your time. And I think all of it really just kind of prepares you for the next job. And you learn from every cast you work with. And so... Mm-hmm. The intensity of Criminal Minds, I think, helped me understand the intensity of Westworld. And I mean, honestly, Westworld is kind of a standalone. I think the biggest thing that helped me on that set was knowing the world season one and being like a crazy fan that had their own theories, and then having Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan on set. I think those two elements, and then just working with Evan and James, they could help with whatever information. And I mean, all my scenes were with them, so we talked and we built a friendship and a relationship, and so it was just so easy to work with them after the first week, really.
So this is a wild concept to me, that you watched season one of Westworld and you were a big fan, and then you got hit in your email inbox with the opportunity to audition, and you actually were on season two. Like, that, I think, is something that people don't really take into consideration. Like, the fact that this guy could have been a guy that watched the show, and now he's on the show.
Yeah, seriously, it still trips me out, man. Like, I laugh about it every time, because I'm like, yo, I think after every episode almost, I'd be like, oh my God, this show is so good, I need to be on season two.
Right.
So maybe just saying it over and over after every episode and just thinking about it so much, I truly did manifest it.
You spoke it into existence.
I mean, I always think that, just because when I walked out of that audition, I looked at my phone, it was 11:11. I stopped outside, put my hands in the air, and I just thought to myself, literally, I said, I'm going to book this show. And I was like, it's done. And I let it go, and then a week later I got the call, and I was like, fuck yes.
What was it like the first time you walked onto the set to begin work on Westworld then, having been such
so
a big fan?
So surreal. So surreal. Honestly, it was interesting. My first day on the set, I went for the wardrobe fitting, and I just got to see like Sweetwater as I drove past it, and it was like, oh shit, I'm here.
That would melt my brain.
Yeah, it was like, oh my God, I'm really here. And then when the first day, my first day on set, it was a night shoot, and it was like somewhere off in the distance. It wasn't even in the main town, but I think my first day on the base camp where Sweetwater was, at lunch, I just walked around the town and just kind of took it in and just really soaked up the fact that I was in this world now. Like, you stop living as Patrick and you become Phil, and it's like, okay, I walked around the park, got familiar. Like, if I was collecting these hosts on a daily basis, I'd know exactly where to go, what doors lead to what. And so I just tried to familiarize myself with everything, and it was just so dope, man, because like, I loved Leo Nam's character, Felix, and mm-hmm. I loved his relationship with Maeve. So to be a tech as well, and to go into the lab and see all of that stuff, it was just like hitting a candy store, you know? Like,
yeah.
When you're that big of a fan of something, like, I was on the Reddit forums. Like, that's what people don't realize. Like, I was reading shit with everybody else. Like, nah, Bernard's not a host. Like, how could that be? And I was screaming at my TV when it happened. Like, it was so real. And then fast forward a year and a half, it's like,
you were fucking there.
Yeah, man, it's fucking wild.
So did you develop any method actor style habits, you know, like Daniel Day-Lewis, to just fully engross yourself in the role of Phil, maybe like only using a tablet for a few months beforehand?
I would walk around with that tablet, actually.
Really?
Yeah, the tablet on set, it took a lot of convincing from Kurt, the prop master, to let me walk around with it, because they don't want anything getting out, or obviously measurements getting stolen, or people mm-hmm. copying it or whatever. But yeah, I would just get comfortable with having that tablet on me, since it was kind of my saving grace. It was the only thing keeping me alive yeah. for a bit with Dolores. Yep. Yeah. So
I always wondered, is there actually some interface on those tablets that you're using, or is that all CGI'd in after?
Yeah, it's CGI. It's all CGI, but the tech people are, these CGI people are really, really great, the VFX team, and they put little like tape dots on there. So they have the idea of what the interface looks like. And so you actually have to just hit the tape, swipe in the specific places of where they're going to put those controls, which I think was really cool that they've thought that far into advance, that at the shooting stage, they already know what it's going to look like.
Is it ever hard to like actually act out the scene when your finger's not even like poking anything on there? You're just touching like a glass little tablet.
No, I mean, they showed me the pictures enough, so you just kind of, I don't know, I kind of have, like, a photographic memory, so once I saw it, I would just, like, take a mental image, and then with the dots, you just kind of remember, all right, go to host, interface, memories, files, backups, photos, and then start swiping.
He's a pro, Jared.
It's like we all use iPads, I feel like, or used to using glass touchscreens, so it's like you can fake type it on your phone. You can fake swipe it on an iPad. That was probably the easiest part, was doing the tech stuff, but probably the most fun. I don't know why. Just knowing that what it was going to look like later, probably.
That's crazy. I mean, obviously Westworld, one of the more complex television shows, or really any form of entertainment ever created, I would argue. But nobody really thinks about the fact that like you're sitting there holding this glass tablet with this interface that you can't actually see, that somebody's having to create and go back and CGI onto that screen. That's just nuts.
And I think that's something that they do so seamlessly, is that they've dropped people into this world with season one. And what I've always kind of liked is that they didn't really explain anything. They gave you the information and continued on with the storyline.
Right.
And revealed more as you got into it. And it was like, okay, now all this is kind of tying together and dots are making sense and connecting all of it. But once you get into season two, like, I feel like that first episode, they just completely throw so much information that doesn't make sense with Bernard's timelines and everything. And you just believe the world at this point. So all the CGI, all the bullet wounds, and all, like the when Kasuya killed the Shogun dude cut his head in half. Oh, yeah. My goodness.
That was gnarly.
But like, that was so gnarly. That was intense.
Yeah.
But like, you just completely believe that this is what goes on in this world. But like, they did that all practically. Like, they had a stunt guy in a suit. The head came off, then blood squirted out. Like, that's what I mean by they try to keep it as real as possible.
Yeah, it looked like
that wasn't CG.
It looked like a chocolate fountain that you'd see at like a buffet, pouring out the top.
Just pouring out the top.
So I have one more question before I let Jared ask another one, and that's obviously one of the things about Westworld with all of us, and obviously we're huge fans if we do a Westworld podcast, right?
Yeah.
We were thoroughly confused throughout the course of season two, as is the nature of this show. You're supposed to be confused, and you're supposed to have to put a lot of deep thought into it and figure things out and make of it what you will. As an actor that was involved in the storyline and the show, and I don't know how much information you're given while you're filming, but I certainly, you must have watched season two in its entirety after it came out, right?
Yeah, 100%.
What was your level of understanding or confusion throughout the course of season two?
Very. it was so interesting because while filming, I wanted to figure out what was happening probably for the first like 2 weeks. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to just focus on Phil and what Phil's going through, because Phil doesn't care about what's happening. Phil cares about Phil. And so I stopped trying to like figure things out. I mean, I'd see certain things on set and mentally, I probably subconsciously like try to connect dots. Watching it though, I was like, okay, I know what that is, 'cause I saw that on set and I know what that is, but what does that mean?
Right.
Like having the information without an explanation means nothing with this show.
Right.
Which is kind of why they can show you the pearl in episode 2 and you have no clue what it is. And then episode 10, when Dolores has 6 of them in her bag, you're like, oh my gosh, she's got robots with her. It's like, it's like they create this, this like trail of breadcrumbs that gives you like so much information. Like it gives you, they give you the answer before they tell you what questions to be asking.
Yep. That's a phenomenal way of putting it. So Phil plays such a crucial role in season two as the catalyst for pretty much everything that happens outside Shogun World in episodes 2 to 6. I mean, he told Teddy, you know, his life is for the humans' fun. He ended up turning Teddy into the Terminator, made Dolores' squad almost invincible, revived Craddock. Did you have any idea that your character was going to be so influential in this season?
Not at all. Not at all. They were such a secretive show. Like, I was getting just the scenes I was in, and I was getting them days before I would shoot, so I didn't get much time to digest or information to begin with. And so it was just kind of like, as we go, I really didn't even know how long I was gonna be in it. I just knew that they had me on hold through October, which extended through November.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, well, call me when you want me to come back. And so it was really cool just to kind of see, because even once we were done filming, I didn't realize how big of a role it was, just because I didn't see everything else and the ripple effects that
you didn't have the whole story yet.
And so watching it was even crazier to be like, oh wow, they really fucked Phil over. But it was really cool to kind of just sit back and be like, oh wow, like I'm actually like a pretty cool part of this show.
Tired Tech and his tablet just crushing season two.
What was that?
Tired Tech and his tablet.
Right?
You
exactly,
just destroy the season.
It's just coming through it.
Dude, like thinking about the fact that you'll have that forever too, like no matter where else your acting career takes you, you will always be this big part of Westworld season two, which is millions of fans. That's such a cool step for you in your career. So congratulations on that, because I know that means a lot, and it's very, very cool.
Thank you, man. No, it definitely does. And I mean, like it almost means so much more, because like Christopher Nolan and Jonah Nolan as a team have inspired a lot of the films that I watch and the acting that I want to do. And so it meant a lot to be 23 when I booked this, and I've been trying to get to a point where I work with Jonah, and then at 23 I get there. It's like you imagine this person you're supposed to be in the future, and
right.
It's like once you hit it, it's almost like, damn, I didn't realize we were there yet.
Right.
And so it's super humbling just to know, like you said, I have this forever. Forever, you can go on HBO Go, watch season two, and there's Phil.
There you are,
and
man.
It's like, yeah, man. It's a trippy thing. It's a really trippy thing, but super grateful, man. Super, super grateful and thankful and ready for more, honestly.
That's so awesome. So, you know, a big part of the show is all the music, you know, the scoring, Ramin Djawadi. What?
Amazing.
So do you have a favorite cover of his?
A favorite part of his?
A favorite like cover song he's done, one of the orchestral covers, you know.
Let me hold on, because I have actually like a lot of them. My favorites, heart-shaped box, I love.
Yeah, that's hard to beat.
Heart-shaped box, I love. I did really like the one he did for the Raj.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was great. But actually, while filming on season one, what songs did I use? I listened to the main title, obviously, over and over.
My favorite song definitely is Dr. Ford.
Dr. Ford is a great one. Exit music for a film, though, that one probably was the one I used the most on set. Set me into the chaos of what was happening. Because I don't know, it just kind of brought me back to that moment of the ending of season one, because it's that song that's playing when Maeve's getting off the train, right. Ford's giving his speech, yeah, all of that. And I don't know, just the intensity and the way that builds, he killed that. I love the way he does it. And the Kanye song. Wait, what am I talking about?
Runaway. Yeah. Yeah, Runaway. Runaway was sick.
Which came on right after my first scene, which I was pretty happy
about. Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, that's kind of dope.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the scoring of Westworld is such an underrated part, because people talk about, you know, how much of a mindfuck it is. They talk about how good the story is, but the music just ties it all together.
The music is another character. I mean, the music is definitely another character, because the songs mimic what's happening in the scenes, or they explain what's happening in the scenes, rather.
Right.
Dude, and the lyrics to them will.
He went all over the place, man, like pulling from the Rolling Stones.
Oh, and the RZA song he did this season.
Oh, yeah. The Wu-Tang song. That was fucking
the Wu-Tang song, I mean. Yeah. That was so hard.
Yeah, we talked about that quite a bit. But, I mean, he was like, that's the thing. He went from Rolling Stones to Wu-Tang to Radiohead to The Cure to Kanye. Like, he really went all over the place. And I didn't even know this about him, but he's the guy who composed the Game of Thrones theme song, too. Like,
that I did know. Yeah.
That's crazy.
And, I mean, you can kind of hear it in the Westworld theme song. He uses a lot of similar triplets.
Yeah, a little bit.
I'd love to like know what his iTunes playlist looks like.
No shit, right?
whatever he listens to is dope, super eclectic. Yeah. I'm loving it.
So were you a big fan of the X-Men movies growing up?
Yeah, actually.
Because you were so funny. You were choked out by Cyclops.
Yo, that's so funny you said that exact thing, because I told James that after after we filmed that scene, after I got a bit more comfortable with him, I was like, yo, honestly, man, I'm not even gonna lie to you. The 7-year-old in me is really screaming right now because I got choked out by Cyclops. Like,
that's so
when
amazing.
I was looking in his eyes, it was like, yo, this is some real shit.
Could you ever really have imagined it?
That's fantastic.
No, never. And that's what's so crazy, is because like James Marsden from Enchanted to The Notebook to everything he's done has always been Cyclops in my mind.
Just right.
That was the first thing I saw him as a kid. So it was like, that's who you are, especially because X-Men was so big.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, man, that was such a cool experience. Because like for me, Evan was the girl in 13. I'm not sure if you guys know that movie.
Right.
So because that was the first thing I saw her in. And then James was Cyclops, so I was like, I'm just working with two different like people that I've watched in movies, and it's like it was just, man, it just brings me back to the fact that Westworld was one of the most surreal, amazing experiences I've ever had as an actor.
Now, like, if you had had your way when you were changing up Teddy's code, could you have given him laser eyes?
Oh, I don't know if that's a feature yet on the host.
Yeah, it's not an option yet.
Season 3. I know they got video recording. They got that 4K specialty in their eyes, but I'm not sure if lasers are there yet.
So I think our listeners would murder us if we didn't talk to you about what appears to be Phil's death scene.
We could call it that.
So there we go. Okay. The way I saw it, Phil had three options. Shoot himself in the head with the gun that Teddy gave him, 0% chance of survival.
Zero.
Ride that train to the end of the line. I'll give that a 1-5% chance of survival.
I'll take that.
I don't know if this train had airbags, but there's...
I'm pretty sure it didn't. It was pretty rickety.
Yeah. Now, break a window with the gun Teddy gave him and then tuck and roll. I'm going to say 50%.
I'd give you that one. I've played this over in my head many a time. I've lost sleep over this. I've thought about this plenty of times. And then actually, after watching the episode, I have another theory, because I did do something, and on the day I didn't even think of it, but I guess subconsciously I was, and that's why it worked. If you look closely, and I'm not saying anything because I don't know what Lisa Joy and Jonah Nolan have planned yet. But if you look closely, Phil starts running to the back of the train, or the other side, or the front of the train, rather. And that door that Angela came in when she said we're nearly there was never locked. So that's all I'm going to say. And then, so yeah, I'll go with you on that tuck and roll, 50% chance. Maybe we break a leg. Yeah, maybe we break a leg and then we got to like shoot our way with one bullet to the front.
Well, especially after this interview, I don't think I'll have ever rooted for anything as hard in my life as the fact, as the chance, the off chance that Phil might still be out there.
You know what? I got my fingers and my toes crossed, bro.
There you go.
Wow.
I'm holding on.
This is going to take over my off season now. Is like starting a mission to keep Phil on the show.
Yo, we got
to
get
all the possible theories. Let's just flood Reddit.
Yeah, there we go.
All the possible theories of how Phil could still be alive.
We got to get deep on Reddit, have a whole Phil fan base built up, going in hard. Yeah.
This is going to get to the top of Reddit now. It's like, Phil might still be alive. He says in revealing interview.
Right? Yo, that would be hilarious. I'd love that.
We'll do our best.
So I was always wondering, what was your favorite place that you visited during filming?
That's a tough one. That's really a tough one. Favorite place while visiting? Probably Sweetwater, just because that was like all I had to go off of was season one, and so most of it was either the lab, which all looks the same, or right. Sweetwater. And so it was like this town that they built that was, I don't know, in my eyes, like the second you look at the town, you immediately know it's Westworld.
Right.
And what I didn't realize is the saloon, the Mariposa, was the same saloon from the opening sequence of Django, where they shot the sheriff.
What?
Dude, yeah. No.
Now that I think about it, it's the exact same.
It's the exact same one. And that was the only building that was there before they built the Westworld set. And they just kept that and built the town around that.
Holy
which
shit.
Makes sense because the Mariposa is such an iconic thing for Westworld.
How did I not see that? I can like totally picture
that. I don't
know.
But that's the thing, is like even after knowing that town is still Sweetwater to me.
Right, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why I'm like, yo, that set, that landscape will probably always be my favorite. Although shooting on that train was just fun as hell.
Yeah.
Because once again, they do things very real. She really pulled that pin out and that train car really separated, and it happens way faster than you think.
Did you get to ride any of the Doom buggies?
I did just when we were riding back to set, just because they were there at Fort Forlorn. And yeah, that was one of the transport ways we got back one time.
No shit. Nice.
But I didn't get to drive. Yeah, sadly.
As a body shop tech, you know your way around the hosts. So do you think Ashley Stubbs is a host?
You know what? I was really trying to figure that one out. Because I couldn't tell if he was a host at the end or if he could just tell that Charlotte wasn't Charlotte.
Now, right. I am on team probably a host, but very good chance not. Ross is firmly believing that Ashley
like,
Stubbs
I'm like
is a
120%
host.
The dude is a host.
I'm thinking he's not.
Man, what?
Thank
I've
you.
Watched the scene like five times.
Thank you, Patrick.
I'm thinking he's not. And the only reason is just because there was a change that happened with Stubbs. Now, granted, he could have been programmed to not trust the host, and that was why they did it. But
sure.
I just – there was such a heartfelt change, and I feel like if he was realizing that Bernard was a host and we were figuring out all this stuff, he would have had some sort of sentience at some point.
Right.
But, yeah, no, I think he's just a human that has a heart.
Okay, I could see it from that angle, and we hadn't really put it that way, but, like, he definitely does go through a change throughout the course of season two where he stops being – so on the human side.
Yeah, he was ready to kill Akichita when he captured him.
Right.
He was like, what are you doing? I'm over this.
So it seemed to me like Dolores genuinely appreciated everything that Phil did for her. Did you think that she was going to kill Phil all along, or did you, think she was going to tow Phil around like Maeve does with Felix and Sylvester?
I was hoping that she would just tote me around and have me do her bidding the entire time.
Right.
And maybe if I like, cause by the time I changed Teddy, I wasn't like tied up or anything. Like we had more of a relationship. It was like, all right, I'm doing this for you.
Yeah.
And like, I got you now. I'm willingly coming in here. I waited outside, like, I'm here. I thought we were more on the same side, but then she has her own agenda, and humans are humans at the end of the day. So,
yeah,
you know, Dolores.
Dolores. Yeah, you had that guy next to you just kind of Teddy blew his brains out. That kind of had to be some foreshadowing for you.
Yeah, and exactly, that was actually kind of when I started to realize, I think when Phil started to realize that it doesn't matter.
That
doesn't matter how much I help her, what happens. I got caught, and now I got to do this until I die.
Yep, that's the bummer of it.
Yeah, you should have got discovered by Maeve. That would have been...
Whole different ball game.
Whole different ball game. Would have gone to Shogun World. Might have gotten my head chopped off. But it would have been cool. But no. So fun though to go around with Dolores though. Like the Deathbringer, as they called her by the end of it. Like, she surely did bring death to everything she crossed paths with. Yeah. She's definitely dead. I mean, Teddy even killed himself. That was intense.
That was fucked up. Ooh.
Although I did say, if he didn't kill me, I could have brought him right back.
See?
Could have brought him right back. Would have been good.
Yeah. Dolores really messed up there. So we have some questions about your fellow cast members. Which actor or actress is the most unlike their character? My guess is Ed Harris. Ross, who's your guess?
Ooh, shit.
Ed Harris is probably one of the nicest guys I met on set. We spoke very, very briefly, and in his very gravelly, deep voice, he said, "Welcome to Westworld."
Oh my god!
I was like, "That's dope, thanks, man."
I need that for my voicemail on my phone.
Welcome to Westworld. Ed Harris is I think Evan though.
Yeah, that would have been
probably
my guess.
Most unlike her character, because she's such an amazing, kind-hearted, like, sweet woman, and she's such a dope person. She's funny as hell. And Dolores is, well, I won't say Dolores is an asshole. What's his name? Wyatt is.
There you go.
Wyatt is a motherfucker, man.
To be specific, Wyatt is a motherfucker.
So you like Dolores, but really anti-Wyatt?
Yeah, you know? I mean, I feel bad for Dolores. Dolores had such a hard life, so much trauma, and Wyatt, I don't know enough about him to feel bad. All I know is that he just kills people, so I don't know if I could just be with
him. Yeah, that dude is the Deathbringer.
Was it pretty cool watching Evan change her voice to do the Wyatt and the Dolores monologues?
100%. So much. And I mean, there was this one moment when on the train platform when Benson got shot. We did it a couple different ways, and so one way she was like more angered at Benson when she was asking for where her father was, and then another way she just stepped off to the side for like 2 minutes and came back, and she was so pained, and like she looked like a distraught child with tears in her eyes, and she was like, "Where's my father?" And I was like, the fact that she made that change so effortlessly, and just, I don't know, just it was truly amazing watching Evan work. Like, the way she does what she does is incredible. It's I'm trying to find a better word than amazing, but it's truly fantastic.
Just
to
crazy
watch.
Talented though, for real. I mean, you can tell just like that the her ability to, I mean, everybody on this show for the most part, the characters are more, like I said, complex than
honestly. Jeffrey Wright doesn't get enough credit. That man puts in work. He's detailed, so detailed, and people, I think he makes it look so easy that people don't realize how much he's doing.
You talked about how, you know, Evan Rachel Wood will always be from 13 for you. What was the other example you used? What was it, Jared? You remember?
For me, it's was it Daniel Radcliffe as Harry Potter?
No,
yeah,
he gave us one earlier on when we were interviewing him. He said, shit. Well, whatever. I can't remember. Point is that Ed Harris will always be from A History of Violence for me. For some reason, that's the one that always pops into my head that I always think of him as.
So you talked about Jeffrey Wright. Fun side note, the highlight of my year was when Jeffrey Wright waved to me at South by Southwest World.
Yo, that's so dope. You went to that?
Yeah, I was there. It was amazing. And I actually happened I happened to be there the night that Jeffrey Wright, Jonah Nolan, Lisa Joy, Evan Rachel Wood, Jimmy Marsden all came. It was crazy.
That's so dope.
Jeffrey Wright will always be from Casino Royale for me. Because he was in
that Jeffrey Wright?
Yeah, that James Bond movie.
Oh yeah, no, for him it's Shaft. Do you remember Shaft?
There you go. Back yeah.
With Sam Jackson. Oh my God, when he played the Latino crime boss.
Yeah.
I was like, yo, the range on that guy.
Oh, for real. So
his range is just crazy.
Speaking of cast members, did you get to at all meet Sir Anthony Hopkins?
I didn't.
Oh,
and that hurt me. I didn't even know he was still on the show.
Oh my God! That's, yeah,
I didn't even know he was still on the show.
Damn, that's fucking crazy.
As far as I knew, he was dead.
Well, so. Season 3, when Phil comes crawling through the desert,
yeah,
right? Then you're gonna meet him.
I'm trying to be down there in the forge.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, you were in the park.
I was close to the mesa, so if anything, I could just walk up in there, find a train, we out.
Maybe go to the break room, get a coffee, kind of rejuvenate yourself.
Exactly, rejuvenate real quick. You know what? I want one of those little, like a device I wish was real, was those little like surgical
sober
up things.
Yes.
You know, when they cut themselves, you just burn it closed immediately. I'm like, yo, I need that in my life.
Yeah, that shit is badass.
The Shogun could have used that with his head.
Yeah, he could have.
Right?
Just flip it back up top and just nail it closed.
No more band-aids, though. That technology.
I wonder if it would have worked that quickly.
Right.
That's amazing.
So, Patrick, we have 4 questions here from our listeners, and then we'll let you go. The first question is from listener T-Money. And he wants to know,
T-Money.
He wants to know if you would voluntarily join the host side in a war. Because personally, he says he would bounce out on humans and then said LMAO.
Yeah, probably. I mean, at this point, yeah, sure. Like, between my experience with Dolores and Teddy, and then if I had maybe just one conversation with Maeve, yeah, I'm on board.
You bounce, yeah.
Okay.
I'm with you, dude. I think that was the only way to go
if you're in your
position on that show.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, they can't die. So I'm trying to be on the winning team there.
Next.
But Team Money, great question. Thank you.
Listener Jackie Fish.
Jackie Fish.
She asks, how much do the cast members actually know while filming their scenes? Does anyone really know the big picture, or is it just as much of a wonderful confusion for the actors as well? You kind of touched on this, but I mean... You don't really know. You said the kind of end game for your scene. You said they give you like the.
I personally did not. I did not know. All I got were scenes. Teddy, Dolores, Evan, James. I mean, Tandy. All series regulars. They got full scripts, but it was weird as well because she still would have slight confusion because while we were filming episode 2, the next day she would go film a scene from episode 8. And then not get the full script for it though. So it was like, okay.
That's so crazy. Fuck.
Yeah, so it's a wonderful game of everybody trying to figure it all out at the same time. But then as you get closer to ending, people start knowing more, and some people know the ending and other people don't. It's pretty funny to kind of see the tensions change.
So this next one's from listener Henry Moore. He wants to know whose control units you think Dolores has in her purse when she escapes in Charlotte Hale's body.
Okay, so I think she's got, because there were 5, right?
Right, or 6, 5 right. or 6?
I think it's 5.
5, yeah.
5? Let's call it 5.
Okay.
6, I don't know. So she's got, fuck.
I know, it's a tough one. I love the question.
She's got her dad. She's got her dad for sure. Yeah, great question. She's definitely got her dad. I think she has Teddy, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
I thought she slapped Teddy into the...
I thought she put him in there, but then...
Could she have taken
him
out?
Maybe she took him back out.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess you don't have to keep the ball attached. You can take it with you.
I'm like, you can take that thing back out. Why not?
Yeah, you don't have to leave a flash drive in once you transfer the file.
Right, it's over.
Exactly. You transfer the file, you pop it back out. I got it with me. Cool. So that's 2. I'm hoping she has Maeve, but I'm not sure how she would have gotten it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's my only thing. That's the only.
What if Ashley Stubbs, we find out, slipped it into her pocket and slipped it into her purse while talking to her, and we see a little shot later on, just like loading
up. Yo, dead ass, that might have been it.
Could be possible.
Because I think she checked because she felt something. And that's why that shot was there. Because she wouldn't have just opened to be like, okay, look at my balls. She would be like, she'd be like, yo, I felt something in there.
Is this theory going to the top of Reddit tonight?
It might be.
Yo, I like this one. This one, I'm on board with this one. Ashley Stubbs slipped in Maves. And who else though?
I don't know. That's what the beauty of it is though, is like they don't.
I'm like, who else
could a lot of people think that it might be Emily's control unit. So the idea is that when Dolores says she came across Emily's body, that she took out the control unit then.
Wait, what?
So Dolores, before she comes across the man in black,
she's not a host.
Oh, see, that theory requires you to be on the Emily was a host train.
Yeah.
Wait, what is this? The whole time? Ain't no way.
Maybe not the whole time, but that's the thing, is it's impossible to know.
Yeah,
right?
I'm just putting this out there, not saying I believe it. This is what many people are saying, but I have no idea at all, obviously, just like everything
else
in this
show. I just
don't
see what the point of that would be, though, because it's like, what's Emily going to do in season 3? You know, I don't know. But, oh, you know what people went with? The cross arms thing? Because you know how there's Charlotte Hale's body is one of the hosts that we see in the outside world. She does something where she crosses her arms that apparently Emily is the only character we've seen do that or some shit. I don't know. You know how this is, man. Yeah. People run all over the place with this shit.
This is interesting. This is very interesting. Now, see, now you guys got me thinking, and this is bad. The whole day is going.
I'm sorry. Yeah, we've done that to people before. Sorry.
I'm like, hold on, wait, but all right, so. Fuck. God, I love and hate this show because now I really can't figure this out.
That's the way it's supposed
to make
you feel.
All
right,
yeah, let's say it's Emily. Let's say it's Emily's. But, well, wait, can it be? Nah, because that doesn't work on the real world yet. Fuck. Yeah, let's say Emily was a host.
That sure is easier for counting up the balls.
It is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, let's just, for argument's sake.
I mean, that's a good enough answer.
Yeah, honestly, that's more like singular answers than most people could give.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I'm for my two for sure, and I'll say for sure on this one, Teddy and
Abernathy.
Abernathy, yeah.
That makes sense.
By the way, shout out to Lewis Hertham. That man is incredible as a human being, as an activist, as a citizen of America. That man is truly wonderful, and I love him. Shout out to Lewis Hertham.
Yeah, we actually had a listener who DM'd us and said, like, either her or her aunt, like, grew up to Lewis Hertham's mom, and he was just the nicest guy.
Yo, one of, like, the kindest souls I've ever met in this industry.
Did you ever watch Californication?
No, actually, I was just starting it the other day because my roommate was telling me to watch it.
Okay, first of all, you got to watch it. It's funny as hell. But Lewis Hertham plays just the most ridiculous character on that show.
I'm going to check it out. Now that you told me he's on it, I didn't know that. I'm going to check it out for sure.
Yeah, it's hysterical.
So the last listener question we have for you, Patrick, is a listener named Kevin Romace.
Kevin Lomace?
Romace, I believe.
Romace, gosh, Kevin Romace. What's
and
up, Kev?
He asked a very, very big question. He just said, what happened in season 2? Very broad question from Kevin.
The birth of a host civilization.
That's a good answer.
A new kind of people. If you'll go back to Westworld season 1, episode 1, when Bernard confronts Ford about the reveries. Ford asked Bernard, do you know what happened to the Neanderthals, Bernard? We ate them. And I think that was a very telling line for what is going to happen through the course of this show.
Damn. Now I'm going to be thinking about that the rest of the day.
Yeah, I think this show is about a new civilization coming to rule.
I'm an idiot. The dude on Californication is not who I was thinking of. It's Jason Begge.
Wait, what?
They look similar.
Wait, you thought it was Lewis Hertham and it's not him?
It's not. I'm an idiot. I apologize.
So now you're telling me not to go watch it.
No, you should still watch it, but I mean, I'll just give you this about Californication. First 4 seasons, fantastic. After that, but...
Well, people say the same thing about Dexter, but what do you think about Dexter, Patrick?
Dexter, I only finished the first 2, so...
Good for you.
I'm probably not the person to ask about that.
Yeah, that doesn't help my case.
First, like, 4 or 5 of Dexter were good, too. The ending, So it's a Showtime thing. They have a problem with this.
It's wrapping things up.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
You know.
Patrick, thank you so much for coming on the show. We're going to use up the last of our mercy here and let you go.
Oh, thank you guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, seriously, yo, man, we appreciate it.
Oh, man, so do I, man. Right back at you guys, for sure.
Have a good one.
You guys have a great one. Peace.
Later, man. Fucking Phil, man. I can't believe how well that went. That dude is awesome. Thank you again. Like, huge, huge, huge thank you to Patrick Cage II for coming on, taking the time to talk to Jared and I. That was like, I don't know if you can be starstruck through a phone, but I feel like there were moments where I was. Just listening to him and then listening to him talk about all these other actors and actresses that we know and love from the show, I'm like a little in shock. That was mind blowing.
This is the best Tuesday that I've had in a very, very long time.
I'm going to go home and sit on my couch and just smile.
Yeah. There were actually moments during the interview where Ross and I looked at each other like kids in a candy store, like because Patrick was about to say something that like was we had not known.
Really?
Oh my God.
He's doing it. He's doing it. He's really giving us the deets.
Well, hopefully that's the first of many cast member interviews, and we hope you all enjoyed it. No off season for Freeze All Motor Functions, baby.
To sport.
Freeze All Motor Functions.